The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia. My name is Sarah Goddard, and I am the Associate Director of Author Events here. Tonight, we are pleased to present world-renowned art historian Haydn Herrera. Before we begin, please take a moment to turn off your cell phones. And please join the author upstairs immediately after the program for a book signing in the lobby. Our guest tonight, Haydn Herrera, is best known for her influential biography, Frida, a biography of Frida Kahlo, which helped to establish the Mexican artist's reputation in America and was used as source material for the popular 2002 film, Frida. Her other books include Mary Frank, Matisse, A Portrait, and Arshil Gorky, His Life and Work, which was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize in 2004. She lectures widely and has curated several exhibitions of art, most recently Frida Kahlo, the first Kahlo exhibition in the United States in nearly 15 years. The exhibition opens at the Philadelphia Museum of Art next Wednesday, February 20th, and runs through May 18th. Organized in celebration of the 100th anniversary of the artist's birth, the exhibition presents over 40 of the artist's most important self-portraits, still lifes, and portraits from the beginning of her career in 1926 until her death in 1954. In conjunction with this exhibition, Walker Art Center has published a richly illustrated catalog, which is on sale in the lobby tonight. It's very beautiful, which features more than 100 color plates, as well as critical essays by Haydn Herrera, Elizabeth Carpenter, and Latin American art curator and critic Victor Zamudio Taylor. Ms. Herrera's talk this evening will focus on Kahlo's life and work, specifically ways in which the artist's self-portraits chronicle her relationship with muralist Diego Rivera. Please join me in welcoming Haydn Herrera to the Free Library.
Good evening. I'm very happy to be here tonight, and you're going to love the Frida Kahlo show that's about to open. It's really wonderful. I'm going to start very immediately with the first slides, photographs of Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera. Do we need to, are the lights okay? It's all right? Should the lights be dimmed a bit? I'm going to talk tonight about the exchange of influence in their art and also how both of them chronicled their marriage in paint in very different ways. In their native Mexico, Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera have been called sacred monsters. Rivera was el muy discutido pintor, the much-discussed painter. Dressed in her native Mexican costumes, Kahlo was his exotic wife. Their political scandals, their controversial paintings, their love affairs, separations, were great entertainment for the Mexican public. One friend observed, quote, Diego and Frida were part of the spiritual landscape of Mexico, like Popocatépetl and Iztaccíhuatl in the Valley of Anahuac. Those are the two great volcanoes in Mexico. And like those two volcanoes, their marriage could be explosive, but it was also very complex. It was comradely, affectionate, respectful, sometimes carnal, and deeply loyal. Rivera has been famous since the early 1920s when he returned from a 15-year sojourn in Europe to play a leading role in the Mexican mural renaissance. Kahlo languished in undeserved obscurity until the late 70s when feminism and multiculturalism really turned her into a very much of a cult figure. That is Rivera, a photograph on the left from 1930, a mural he was painting in Cuernavaca. And Rivera on the right, also painting at the Detroit Institute of Arts, his mural there in 1932. Rivera was immense, and he painted enormous murals on broad historical subjects on public walls. Mural commissions came to him from the Mexican government and from prominent North American capitalists such as Nelson Rockefeller and Edsel Ford, who actually commissioned the Detroit Institute of Murals that he's painting on the right. Totally dedicated to his art, he worked long hours and was extraordinarily productive. He said that painting was like a biological function for him. He said he was like a tree growing flowers and fruit. He was also an outspoken communist, and he wanted his art to change the world. "Art is like ham," he told a New York reporter. "It nourishes people." Frida Kahlo, this is the one wall of the Detroit Institute of Arts. It's fantastic wall. It's a sort of a whole subject is to industry, especially the automotive industry in Detroit. Frida Kahlo was petite. And you see a self-portrait on the left from 1933, and there she is painting it in a newspaper photograph, painted in Detroit in working in 1933. Frida was petite, and she painted highly personal self-portraits, mostly on small metal or masonite panels. She did not have a disciplined work schedule, nor did she have a careerist attitude towards her art. She said, "Diego always wants me to paint and do nothing else but that, but I am lazy and I paint very little." That was in a letter to a friend. During some periods, she did actually work quite hard, but she worked very, very slowly, and maybe in total there are only about 200 paintings by Kahlo. Kahlo's patrons were mainly friends, and she was always surprised when anybody bought one of her paintings. She'd say something like, "It must be because he's in love with me," or she'd say, "For that price, they could have something better." In part because she did not want to compete with Rivera, she presented herself as the charming amateur. And you can sort of see that in that newspaper photograph on the right. The headline of the Detroit News article for which this photograph appeared was, "Wife of the master mural painter gleefully dabbles in works of art." Good, isn't it? Of course, Frida Kahlo was no dabbler. Kahlo's paintings were impelled by private needs, and they were crucial to her well-being. But she recognized that many people found her fantastical images really, as she put it, too crazy. This is a self-portrait that she painted in 1940, she's showing herself with a thorn necklace. It's like Christ's crown of thorns. During the heyday of Mexican muralism, the creation of such intimate self-portraits was an act of courage. After all, the manifesto of the Mexican Artist Syndicate, which was actually formed in Rivera's home in 1923, had proclaimed that easel painting was dead and that art should be collective and should stir to struggle. This is just a detail, and it's very dark because it's in a rather dark part of the huge mural sequence that Rivera painted in the Ministry of Education in Mexico City in 1920. This part is 1928. In spite of his attitude toward easel painting, Rivera, like Kahlo, painted numerous self-portraits on canvas, whereas Kahlo presented herself as herself, as she felt herself to be in her self-portraits, Rivera often disguised himself in his murals, for example, as he appeared here as an architect on the left, or in his Cuernavaca mural that he did it's in the Cortez Palace in Cuernavaca from 1930. He has disguised himself, there he is on the left, as Morelos. Neither Frida Kahlo nor Diego Rivera flattered themselves in their depictions of themselves. But Frida Kahlo flattered Diego when she painted him. That's her self-portrait of Diego Rivera on the right from 1937, and Rivera's self-portrait from 1949. It's called The Ravages of Time. When Kahlo painted Rivera, she depicted him as himself, her husband, as the man that she adored. When Rivera painted Kahlo, he usually cast her, as you see her here in the red shirt with a little communist star, He usually, it's the insurrection section of the Ministry of Education murals from 1928. Rivera usually cast her as a political or symbolic figure. And here, what Frida Kahlo, who had joined the Mexican, this is before he married her, she joined the Mexican Communist Party before she even met Rivera, and here she is handing out arms to revolutionaries. When Kahlo modeled for this portrait, Rivera is said to have said, "You have a dog face." And Frida came back with, "And you have the face of a frog." This lithograph on the left, Rivera made of Frida Kahlo during the first months of their marriage, is one of the few images that are really kind of personal and intimate that he made of Frida Kahlo. But it's not exactly flattering. And on the opposite side of the same lithographic plate, he drew Dolores Olmedo, who you see on the right. It's much more erotic than Frida Kahlo. Dolores Olmedo was a great friend and also one of the many women whom he found irresistible. The fierce candor with which Frida Kahlo recorded her loves, her illnesses, her childlessness was recognized by Rivera. Frida, he said, is the only example in the history of art of an artist who tore open her chest and heart to reveal the biological truth of her feelings, a superior painter and the greatest proof of the Renaissance of the art of Mexico. She, in turn, was a huge enthusiast of Rivera, thought he was the greatest artist in the world. She called him the architect of life. Their love of art and of each other's art was one of the strongest bonds in their marriage. Here on the left, these are two paintings that are in the exhibition, The Broken Column, recording one of her surgeries from 1944, and the other one is Without Hope, I think it's 45, yeah, 1945. Frida Kahlo first laid eyes on Diego Rivera when she entered the National Preparatory School in Mexico City in 1922. She was born in 1907. He was busy painting these first mural in Mexico City, which you see on the left is called Creation, and it's in the school's theater. Legend has it that, and there's a photograph of Rivera busy working on his mural. Legend has it that Kahlo became infatuated with this huge fat man on the scaffold and that she made him the butt of her mischief, doing things like soaping the steps that he had to climb there. He never fell. He apparently had this elephantine grace. And she told her school friends, much to their horror, that she wanted to have a child by Diego Rivera. Legend also has it that 3 years after the bus accident that nearly killed her in 1925 when she was going home from school, she was 18, Kahlo took her first paintings to show to Diego Rivera, who was then at work at the Ministry of Education. This would be 1928. And she asked him whether it was worth her while to go on painting, because she said she had to help support her family. He said yes, and in his opinion, her portraits, he said, this is a quote from Rivera, had unusual energy of expression, precise delineation of character, and true severity. He also admired Frida, and they married in August 1929. I'm comparing here Frida Kahlo's first self-portrait from 1926, it was on the left, 1 year after her accident. On the right, a self-portrait, her second one, from 1929, the year that she married Diego Rivera. In the first one, she called it, when she sent it to her boyfriend, she called it your Botticelli. It's very much inspired by Bronzino, Botticelli, by Italian Renaissance art, and she's kind of a European-type aristocratic figure. Whereas on the right in 1929, she's a Mexican, a very brazen-looking Mexican girl wearing a cheap blouse that you could buy in a market, pre-Columbian beads, and she's sort of looking straight at you in that fierce Frida Kahlo way. There, beginning in 1929, there really is a nice exchange in their art. He had a great effect on her. She had a little bit of an effect on him. He was, after all, 20-some years older than her. But their art developed on different lines. Her art developed on very much different lines from his, yet there were all these points of contact. Kahlo put it this way, quote, "I began to paint things that he liked. From that time on, he admired and loved me." After becoming involved, Frida was very modest. After becoming involved with Rivera, Frida Kahlo espoused the ethic of Mexicanidad, or Mexicanism, which was an ethic shared by all the intelligentsia and the artists and dancers in Mexico after the revolution of 1910 to 20. They all wanted to affirm their Mexican identity and to revalue everything from Mexico's native cultures, including folk art and pre-Columbian art. And Rivera was certainly a chief proponent of this Mexicanist faith. After she married Rivera, here's a photograph, the same photograph you saw before, of Frida and Diego taken in 1939, and a self-portrait that she did of herself wearing the Tijuana hair, the festive headdress of the women of Tehuantepec on the right. This is, again, from 48. After she married Rivera, Kahlo began to wear native Mexican costumes, especially the skirt and blouse of the women of Tehuantepec, who were famous for their strength. For Kahlo, wearing indigenous dress was in part a political act. It proclaimed her allegiance to La Raza. The long festive skirts also hid her limp, and they masked her pain. Rivera did not hesitate to make political mileage out of his wife's clothes. He said, "The classic Mexican dress has been created by people for people. The Mexican women who do not wear it do not belong to the people, but are mentally and emotionally dependent on a foreign class to which they wish to belong, i.e. the great American and French bourgeoisie." Kahlo's exotic costumes allowed her to be the peacock feather in Rivera's cap. She played beauty to his beast. Here, I'm going to show you a series of comparisons of works by Kahlo and Rivera just to show this exchange, how they treated the same subjects very differently, but this must be a reason they painted the same thing. They both painted a lot of Mexican indigenous children. That became a great subject during the 20s for people. On the right is Diego Rivera's Girl with Coral Necklace, 1926. On the left is Frida. I've always called it Nina, but it's also sometimes called Virginia, from 1929, the year she married Rivera. I think it shows the influence of Rivera in that kind of broad, almost, it's almost as though this is a detail from a mural. A lot of simplification there. Also, the choice of subject to paint Mexico's indigenous people was something that she might have taken from Rivera or she started doing it because it was something that he liked. There's a difference in that this child, you feel that Frida Kahlo and this child had a more personal relationship, that Frida Kahlo felt there's a certain poignancy to this painting, especially that little safety pin holding her dress together. Whereas Rivera's painting, even though it's a very good painting, she's a stereotypical Mexican Indian child, and he painted numerous of these portraits of Mexican children very much for the tourist trade. A couple more paintings. Frida Kahlo's Girl with Death Mask on the left from 1938, and Rivera also painted a child with a mask. Both of them were influenced and very much interested in Mexican popular art, and they collected masks. They collected all kinds of native artifacts, and if you've been to the Frida Kahlo museums, you'll see it's practically like a popular art museum. On the left is Frida Kahlo's The Bus, 1929, the year she married Rivera. And on the right is a detail, one of the panels from Rivera's Ministry of Education mural. It's called Night of the Rich, done the year before. It was done in 28, hers is 29. She very much shared his leftist political ideas. What she's done here with the bus is put different levels of Mexican society all lined up on a bus, a little like Daumier's third-class carriage. She's showing her sympathy for the dispossessed, I think, in that the Indian mother, I love these things, right there, holding the baby barefoot, is clearly the heroine. And then the gringo, blue eyes, holding a money bag, is clearly the villain. And I think she's taken this figure from Diego Rivera's. He did this the year before. There's the gringo with the same hat, well, similar hat, carrying a money bag in The Night of the Rich. But hers is so different from his, much sort of much simpler and much more straightforward. Sometimes their subjects were very odd. It's an odd thing that they both, she painted Lupe Marin. This on the left is a lost portrait, that's why I'm showing it in black and white, of Lupe Marin, who was the woman that Rivera was married to before her and with whom he had two children. And they were often rivals, but they were also friends and rivals. There's a photograph of Frida with Lupe from 1931. Is it 31? Yeah, I think it is 31. And here is Diego Rivera's painting of his wife, Lupe, from 1926 to 27. It's a part of the Chapingo mural outside of Mexico City, and it's called The Liberated Earth. Quite different from Frida's, just going back to Frida's more chaste image. Rivera had a much more sexual idea of his wife. Frida Kahlo, he was a tremendous philanderer. His doctor pronounced him unfit for fidelity, and he happily followed the prescription. And even in the first years of their marriage, he started having affairs, and Frida Kahlo retaliated with affairs of her own, one of them with Leon Trotsky, the great Russian revolutionary. That was in 1937. Rivera secured asylum for Trotsky, and Frida Kahlo lent him her blue house, the house where she was born. Her family house in Coyoacan. And she painted the self-portrait on the left and dedicated it to Trotsky after she had a love affair with him. It's odd that she gave him such a sort of 19th century type aristocratic woman, and rather than Frida as a revolutionary. For the great revolutionary, she gave a rather bourgeois version of herself. Both Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera loved the work of José María Estrada. They loved folk portraiture, and they had a lot in their house. But Estrada was one of their great favorites, and that is an Estrada that you see on the right. It's called Girl in the Red Dress. Both of them were influenced by Estrada. Here is, now I'm just comparing the Frida Kahlo influenced by Estrada and then a portrait from 1949 by Diego Rivera showing that same sort of folk art portrait influence on him. In 1931, the Riveras were in San Francisco where he had various mural commissions, and Frida Kahlo painted the horticulturalist Luther Burbank, you see on the left, and Rivera painted the San Francisco Luncheon Club Stock Exchange, this San Francisco Stock Exchange Luncheon Club mural that you see on the right. Both of these things are 1931. Both artists filled their art with fantasy that was, I think, rooted in Mexican popular art. Both of them were very sophisticated about art history, and both were very much aware of surrealism. In Luther Burbank, Frida Kahlo has transformed the creator of hybrid fruits into a hybrid himself, so that Luther Burbank's root, he becomes a tree with his roots plunging into the earth, and she said that was his own skeleton that he was basically fertilizing. And I'm just comparing it to Rivera's image of, where is he? There he is. There's Luther Burbank splicing together some plant. Right here in Rivera's. This is an allegory of California. This is his symbol. He took Helen Wills, the tennis player that he was infatuated with, and made her the kind of allegory of California. She's holding all different aspects of California. I want you to keep in mind these great monumental arms. Here's one hand here. She's of Helen Wills, because Frida Kahlo will borrow them in a couple of her paintings. Let's see. Actually, I think we need to go back. Okay. There's the Luther Burbank. I'm comparing it to a section of the Chapingo mural by Diego Rivera from 1926 to 27. It's called Germination, and what he's done is turn Tina Modotti, the photographer who he was having an affair with, into a tree, and probably that is the source for Frida Kahlo's idea of painting Luther Burbank into a tree, but the paintings are very, very different. But some of the ideas certainly are going back and forth here. They both painted a lot of hybrid creatures. And here is Frida Kahlo's great painting called Roots. I'm sad that it's not in our exhibition, where she has turned herself into a hybrid. She's half plant, half woman. It's kind of a childless woman's dream of where her body opens up and fertilizes the Mexican earth. And I'm comparing it to, I'm showing the next thing is Diego Rivera's hybrid, very funny one, of ancient and modern Mexico. It's a whole part of a huge mural called Ancient and Modern Mexico in the Hospital de la Raza that he did in 1952. Here this tree is part tree, part human being, and it's also part alive and part dead, and part male and part female. Here on the left is another hybrid of Diego Rivera. It's called After the War from 1942. And I'm comparing this with Frida Kahlo's Moses, which is in our show, because both of them have the subject of the dead tree with a new growing sprout, a sort of hope. It's a symbol of hope. And you can see those trees, these kind of old trunks of trees, and then these sprouts coming out in Frida Kahlo's Moses. Frida Kahlo would have loved to have painted murals, but she wasn't really physically strong enough. She had something like 30 surgical operations in her life, and her health kept deteriorating. But Moses is like a tiny mural. It's kind of a history painting with this vast array of characters, kind of like a Rivera mural. However, it's really an expression of Kahlo's obsession with the notion of fertility. Here you see those monumental hands. That remember the ones of Helen Wills? Now, where do they go? There they are. Right here is one hand, and there is another sort of holding this array of gods and heroes. One occasion she was encouraged, she was sort of bored and depressed in New York City when he was working at the Rockefeller Center mural, and he suggested that she try her hand at a mural panel, a fresco panel. She did, and she made this self-portrait, and when she finished it, she hated it and threw it away, but she wrote on it, absolutely rotten, no sirve, that means doesn't work, oh boy, very ugly, Frida. And she threw it in the garbage pail, but her friend Lucien Bloch retrieved it. And it's in our show. So, she never painted a mural, but she did have her students paint murals at La Rosita, which is a pulqueria bar in Coyoacan. The Mexican mural is very much admired pulque bars and their paintings. So she arranged to have her students paint this mural in 1943, but she just supervised, didn't actually paint it herself. They were, as I said, in Detroit in 1932. He was working at the Detroit Institute of Arts. And Frida Kahlo had a terrible miscarriage. She really had decided that she wanted to keep this child, and then she had landed in the hospital and was in terrible state. And afterward was very, very depressed, and Rivera suggested that she go out and buy sheets of sheet metal so that she could paint works that looked a little like Mexican ex-photos or retablos. And you'll see some of them in the exhibition. So she took also his suggestion that she paint every phase of her life. For the first painting she did after the miscarriage is Henry Ford Hospital. Oh, I'm just going to show you what a retablo looks like. There you are. They're usually about the size of a lawyer's pad, and they always have a saint or the Virgin in the sky or floating above somebody, and they're doing the saving, and then underneath is almost always a scroll saying how the saint saved so-and-so from some terrible disaster. And Diego loved retablo, so did Frida, and they had a huge collection of them that are in the Frida Kahlo Museum. Rivera said that his creation mural was nothing but a big retablo. Both of them were influenced by retablo's simplification of form and the straightforward presentation of dramatic event. But it was Frida Kahlo who made the subject and function of retablos connect with her intention on the deepest level. Her portraits of herself in moments of duress have an urgency that makes us know that each was a bid for survival. In Henry Ford Hospital, there she is alone in her hospital bed in this vast, empty plain. And in the distance is the Ford Rouge plant where Rivera was busy making studies for his industry murals. Those six objects floating around her bed are, she said, were sort of symbols of the miscarriage. And the middle one is the fetus that she lost, the little Diego that she lost. Apparently, she demanded to see her fetus. She was refused. And then Rivera procured a fetus for her, and she used that as the model for this painting. Here is a photograph of Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera at the Rouge plant, just to show you what they looked like in these days. The painting that she did after she finished Henry Ford Hospital, she painted her own birth. This one Madonna owns. They both kind of adopted the primitivism of retablos, the sort of simplification of form. This was a deliberately naive style. It was part of a general revaluation of popular art and in Mexico at that time. So in a way, it's demonstrating, it's kind of a political statement, it's demonstrating their allegiance to Mexico's indigenous people. Rivera compared, he loved her shocking subject matter, and he compared her painting of My Birth to this Aztec sculpture that you see on the right. And he said, "Frida's retablos do not look like retablos, nor like anyone or anything else. Frida's art is individual, collective. Her realism is so monumental that everything has N dimensions. Consequently, she paints at the same time the exterior and interior of herself and of the world." These are... This is the east wall of the Detroit Institute of Arts, a detail of a fetus, and that's just the whole wall on the left. It's possibly because of Frida Kahlo's miscarriage, Rivera changed his plan to paint a farm scene here on the east wall, and instead he painted this fetus. His fetus, though, is really an idea about Michigan's fertility. And when Frida Kahlo paints her fetus, it's her own lost child. He's always more intellectual and abstract, and she's always more personal and concrete. Rivera and Kahlo shared a fascination with the functioning and the non-functioning of the body, and they were both very interested in medicine. She'd planned to be a doctor until she had the accident. And like Kahlo, Rivera did not shy away from subjects like surgery and childbirth. Here is Rivera's image of surgery at Detroit and Frida Kahlo's Tree of Hope on the right from 1946, which she painted after she had a spinal fusion in New York in 1946. She, again, always personal, it's always about self-referential, and Rivera is just sort of like more scientific about surgery. Here's the whole of the mural from called Ancient and Modern Medicine from 1952 at the Hospital de la Raza, where we saw that strange-looking female-male tree before. And I'm just going to show you two details from it. On the left is modern medicine, a child being born, and on the right is ancient medicine, with a child being born. So when it's a kind of more clinical, historical view, always more objective. His subject is the history of medicine, not the story of one woman giving birth. Kahlo really wasn't very happy in Detroit and was dying to go back to Mexico and painted this, it's called Self-Portrait on the Borderline between Mexico and the United States, 1932. You have ancient and agrarian Mexico on the left and modern industrial United States on the right. She clearly... neither side looks so great, actually, but she really didn't like American industry. So she's got the Ford factory stacks spewing smoke. In this painting, the flag naturally goes towards the Mexican side. That's where she wanted to be. In this painting, she's put the sun and the moon together for the first time. She did it, and she often divides her skies into night and day and puts the sun and the moon together, and it's interesting that they actually did witness an eclipse the day before she did this painting. Oh, that's, I'm just, sorry, backing up a little bit. her attitude towards industry, as you can see, very negative here. Rivera's attitude towards, he was reverential about industry. He called his Detroit mural, quote, the great saga of the machine and steel. So we go on, and here they are all on the roof of the Detroit Institute of Arts looking at the solar eclipse. But they loved the idea of dualities. They saw life, both of them, in a series of dualities, life, death, male, female, night, day. And here is Frida Kahlo showing the death-life duality, but it's a self-portrait. She actually did have this papier-mâché skeleton, a Judas figure, on top of her bed's canopy. Rivera said it was her lover. And there is a detail from the Detroit mural by Rivera showing the life-death duality. Again, he's always more abstract and distanced. In New York City in 1933, when Rivera was working on his Rockefeller Center mural, Kahlo was painting My Dress Hangs There, you see on the left, and it's her own kind of more sardonic, rather humorous image, a little bit of a protest against what she felt was happening in Manhattan during the Depression years. She was shocked by the division of the rich and the poor. And I'm comparing it to Rivera's work called Frozen Assets. It's a mural panel from 1930, which he did for his show at the Museum of Modern Art in 1930. Both Frida and Diego paint, they see the terrible division between the rich and the poor, and they show New York as a sort of capital of poverty and of capitalism in the Depression years. And for both of them, these skyscrapers are kind of like tombstones. And here I'm comparing this Frida's Dress Hangs There with Rivera's Rockefeller Center mural that you see on the right. It was chipped off the wall by Rockefeller, but he repainted it in Mexico City when he returned in 1934 after he was fired from Rockefeller Center for putting Lenin into the mural. So what you see here, both Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera depict protesters. There's actually the bottom. You'll see this painting in the show. The bottom is all collage, different collages of soldiers, ball games, and a lot of protesters. And then in Rivera's mural, also there are political protests and the contrast between the rich and the poor. That mural is in the Palace of Fine Arts in Mexico City. I'm going to show you a series of works that kind of chronicle their marriage in paint. Here's a photograph of their wedding photograph. She's smoking, typical of Frida. She even smokes in her paintings sometimes. And it's a wedding photograph, 1929. Then 2 years later, she painted this wedding portrait. She was when they were in San Francisco. It was 1931. When they married in August 1929, he was 42. She'd just turned 22. Kahlo's mother said it was like the marriage between an elephant and a dove. But her father approved. He was a German and very intellectual, German background, and very intellectual, and he respected Rivera, and he also knew that Rivera would be able to pay for Frida's medical expenses, and which were pretty considerable after the accident. So the painting that Frida did of, this is her sort of beginning of her chronicling their marriage. It's probably the happiest one having to do with the two of them. However, I think some of the problems that will exist in their marriage are already there. He's the great maestro. He has the palette. She turns towards him. He slightly turns away from her. He's got a big D on his belt. He's unpossessable. And she always had to sort of defer to him and play the constant seductress. She wrote, being the wife, or maybe she said this, I'm not sure if this is written or was said to a friend, being the wife of Diego is the most marvelous thing in the world. I let him play matrimony with other women. Diego is not anybody's husband and never will be, but he is a great comrade. But for all her insistence that he should be free, they should be independent, she puts their hands in the clasped hands in the very center of the portrait. But if you look closely at those hands, Her hand rests very lightly. He doesn't really hold her hand. Her hand kind of rests lightly on top of his. I mean, you sort of sense that he is not entirely hers. But certainly the pivot of her life was the marriage bond. When they returned to Mexico late in 1933, she had sort of persuaded him to go back to Mexico, and he didn't want to because he felt that the Marxist revolution would take place in an industrialized country. And he was very depressed and terrible health when he got back, and her health was pretty bad also. They returned, and they lived in some houses that had been modern houses that you see here, two houses that had been built for them in the meantime by the architect, their friend Juan O'Gorman. They were two houses linked by a bridge, which is kind of symbolic of their marriage, which is very independent. They were sort of separate but unequal. He had a big pink house and she had a smaller blue one. When she was angry at him, she'd lock the door and not let him cross the bridge. So he was furious, and he blamed Frida for being back in Mexico, and he perhaps as a kind of retaliation had a love affair with her younger sister. She had several sisters, but this was the one that she loved the most. She's only a year younger than her, Christina. Oh, here is a photograph of the two of them in this sort of troubled time when they returned to Mexico outside of that Oregon cactus fence. On the left is Frida Kahlo's portrait of her sister Christina, done in 1928, a year before she married Rivera. And so different her work after she met Rivera. And then Rivera's image of Christina from 1929, for Christina as knowledge. Kahlo, after this affair, when she got over it, she sort of said she should never have let her sister pose for Rivera. During his love affair with Christina, Rivera painted Frida and her sister into his national palace mural. There's Frida there, and this is Christina with her two children. They're handing out communist literature for people to read. This is a detail of Christina. It's pretty clear that Christina's the woman that he's way more attracted to, and that Frida he clearly respects and loves, but it's Frida, his sister, that he wants at the moment. Frida was absolutely miserable. Normally she put up with his love affairs, but this one really was too much. She once said, "I suffered two grave accidents in my life. One when the streetcar knocked me down. The other accident is Diego." During this year, 1934, when he had the affair, she painted no paintings, or there are none that we know of, and there are only two paintings from 1935. One of them, you see here, is a few small nips. Here, instead of painting her own predicament, she has projected her own pain onto another woman's calamity. She read in a newspaper about a man who murdered his girlfriend, and then when he was taken before the judge, he said, "But I only gave her a few small nips." Kahlo said that she needed to paint this painting because she felt murdered by life. It's very interesting that her paintings become the bloodiest, and here it's gone right out onto the frame, when she felt rejected by Diego Rivera. During this period, she left Diego. She went to live in the middle of Mexico City for a while, and then she went to New York City. She cut off her hair. She stopped wearing Tijuana dress. She went to New York City to confide with friends, and she decided to forgive Diego and Christina. And she wrote to Diego, quote, "All the rages I have gone through have served only to make me understand in the end that I love you more than my own skin, and that, though you may not love me in the same way, still you love me somewhat. Isn't that so? I shall always hope that that continues, and with that I am content." 2 and 3 years later, she was actually able to make a self-portrait that expressed her anguish over Diego Rivera's affair with her sister. Memory from 1937 on the left, and Remembrance of an Open Wound from 1938 on the right. It's black and white because it's another painting that is lost, like the Lupe Marin portrait. We don't know where it is. In memory, her heart is extracted, as it is. You'll see the great painting of the two Fridas. It's a straightforward image of pain in love. And it's very bloody. It's a painting about rejection. And that ferrule, there's a metal rod that goes through the place where the heart was and a cupid on either end, seesawing, I guess symbolic of Rivera's vicissitudes and his affection for her. And then the two sets of clothing. She has no arms. Her arms are on these clothing, the Tijuana dress on the right and her school dress, on the school uniform on the left. That detached arms is a feeling of kind of helplessness and kind of the way your body feels that you're falling apart if your heart is broken. In Remembrance on the right, there is the foot injury that was real. She started to have terrible problems with her feet and some parts of her toes were amputated in 1935. But the thigh imagery is an invented one, and I think it's probably the idea of the blow to her image as a sexual being when Rivera had the love affair with her sister. When she returned, she had two exhibitions in the United States. One in the United States in 1938, one in Paris in 1939. Both were really, it was thanks to André Breton coming to Mexico in 1938. He claimed Frida for surrealism. She said she wasn't a surrealist, but anyway, he did help get her these two shows. When she came back from her Paris show, I think she was not getting along with Diego Rivera, and he asked her for a divorce. It's possible that he found out about her affair with Trotsky. No one really knows. He was also infatuated with various other women, including Paulette Goddard. While they were divorced, which lasted a year, Kahlo painted some of her most powerful self-portraits. It really shows that her painting is kind of a defiance in the face of pain. She also wanted to support herself both emotionally and financially by painting. Maybe that's why she painted more than ever before. She wrote to her former lover, Nicolas Murai, quote, "Since I came back to Mexico, I don't accept a damn cent from Diego. I will never accept money from any man until I die." Another of the divorce paintings, probably her best known painting, and certainly she only did two really big paintings in her life. This is one, it's the two Fridas from 1939. She said that the one on the right wearing a Tijuana dress was the one that Rivera had loved. The one in the white dress is the one he no longer loved. The Tijuana Frida holds a photograph of Diego Rivera as a child, and from its red frame springs that vein that goes through the two extracted hearts, again, symbol of pain and love. And the Frida that he doesn't love anymore is trying to stop that flow of blood from Diego Rivera unsuccessfully. And actually, you can see it keeps on flowing. And then some of these embroidered flowers have she's transformed them into splotches of blood. It's one of her most lonely paintings. The theme of loneliness is there in most of her work, most of her self-portraits. She wrote to Nick Murai when she was divorced from Diego. She said, "2 weeks ago, we began the divorce. I have no word to tell you," she wrote this in English, "how much I've been suffering. And knowing how much I love Diego, you must understand that this troubles will never end in my life. Now I feel so rotten and lonely that it seems to me that nobody in the world has suffered the way I do. But of course, it will all be different in a few months." Here's another of the paintings from the divorce year, a self-portrait with cropped hairs in New York's Museum of Modern Art. As when he had the affair with Christina, she cut off her hair that he loved, and she stopped wearing the Tijuana dress that he loved. She seems to be wearing Diego's suit. It's too big for her. This, like the two Fridas, is a very, very lonely, angry painting. She's turned her own predicament into a kind of song illustration. The words of the song up above says, "You see, if I loved you, it was for your hair. Now that you were bald, I don't love you anymore." Her health declined terribly during the divorce. And here are a couple more bust-length self-portraits from the divorce year. Self-portrait with monkey from 1940. They're both from 1940. The one on the right is in the show. The one on the left, Madonna owns and isn't in the show. She often painted herself with monkeys. I've always thought they were sort of to replace children, but they really never do alleviate her loneliness. And again, as you saw in that earlier, that other self-portrait from the same year, 1948, she's got Christ's crown of thorns to show her that she's sort of a martyr. Rivera left Mexico with Paulette Goddard and went to San Francisco. He finally, when he heard how sick Frida Kahlo was, she was actually in traction. You'll see photographs in the show of her in traction. She sent him one of those photographs. He asked her to come to San Francisco to talk to doctors. So she went, and then he wanted to remarry her, and they did finally remarry in San Francisco in December of 1940. When she got to San Francisco, Diego Rivera was busy working on his Treasure Island mural. It was part of the Golden Gate International Fair. And he decided to put Frida Kahlo into his mural. You see her there. And you also see, that's Frida. There's Diego holding hands with Paulette Goddard around the tree of love and life. So, again, Frida's a symbolic figure. And he said about her, he said, Frida Kahlo represents the Mexican artist with a sophisticated European background who had turned to native plastic tradition for inspiration. She personifies the cultural union of the Americas for the South. Now, Paulette Goddard, he said, is holding hands around the Tree of Love and Life, and he said that she stood for, quote, American girlhood shown in friendly contact with a Mexican man. Then he was asked why he's holding hands around this tree with Goddard, and he said, it means closer Pan-Americanism. So actually he had abandoned Trotsky at this point, and he was all involved with the idea of Pan-American unity to fight fascism. He'd rejected Trotsky, possibly because of Frida's affair with him. This is the first self-portrait after the remarriage. It's from 1941. Doesn't look like the happiest thing in the world. It's a pretty disquieting image. The necklace almost looks like it's like a yoke or it's going to choke her. And then those serrated leaves really look a little bit dangerous next to her naked flesh. But she's taken the hair that she chopped off in self-portrait with chopped hair and turned it into a kind of pretzel shape put it on top of her head as a reaffirmation of her femininity. They remarried on the basis that they would have sort of mutually independent life and that they would not have any sexual intercourse. Nobody knows when they did or didn't, but the point was they were going to be very independent from each other. But the same old problems existed in the marriage. Kahlo really, even though she kept talking about Rivera should be free, she in self-portrait as a Tijuana that you see from 1943, she clearly continued to want to possess him. And here she's kind of trapped the thought of Diego. That's a portrait of him on her eyebrows, almost as though she wants to consume him. Here, from 1944, on the left, is a tiny painting called Frida and Diego, 1929 to 1944. It was an anniversary present for Diego Rivera. I think the desire to possess is almost turned into the desire to merge herself with her husband because it's half his head and half her head, but their features don't actually line up, and it's pretty disjunctive as an image. So she has to hold their union together with this very uncomfortable-looking, almost like a crown of thorns, but it's a whole tree. It looks as though the marriage bond was a bit of a martyrdom here. I'm comparing it with a very small pre-Columbian head. It's from Tlatilco. It was Frida Kahlo had that head, and she mounted it on a silver, it's about 2 inches high, a silver, and wore it as a pin on her dress. And she eventually gave it to a Spanish refugee lover. But I'm showing it mainly because of the idea of duality that comes in her art and in Rivera's art, partly out of pre-Columbian culture. Here's another anniversary present for Rivera from 1947. This one, a drawing called Ruin. I think she's merged her identity with Rivera's. I think the head looks half like Frida, half like Diego. She said the numbers were his love affairs, lots of them. And she wrote Deceit Avenue up there on the left, And then she wrote Ruin, House for Birds, Nest for Love, All for Nothing, Ruin, February 1947. I think they were. They had moments where they were living together and moments where they were sort of separated. So that's Frida's vision of the marriage. Here's Rivera's painting of Frida in the National Palace. He's depicting her, as usual, as somebody other than herself. Frida as an Aztec here. She's always either, you know, one figure among many. She's not just herself. Here she's a historical figure. And here is a detail. It's a terrible image. I mean, it's much too dark. But you see, it's from his Hotel del Prado mural from 1947. And here's Diego as a boy with a frog and a snake in his pocket holding hands with this Posada, the great printmaker, with one of his inventions, the Calavera Catrina. And there's Frida behind being the sort of mother to Diego with her hand on his shoulder. So he's now portraying Frida Kahlo as the maternal image, and he's the bad boy with the snake. Here, in 1949, he tried to divorce Frida Kahlo again. This time he wanted to marry Maria Felix, this beautiful movie star. You see, this is a newspaper clipping from Mexico, Diego Rivera, that Diego, Maria, and in the middle he was busy painting Maria Felix's portrait that he wanted to make the centerpiece of the big show that he was having at the Palace of Fine Arts. In the end, Maria Felix, well, this actually, Frida got really upset because Maria Felix was an intimate friend of hers as well. And she pretended to scoff, but she clearly, this painting was done, her self-portrait on the right was done during this period where Rivera was having this fling with Maria Felix. It's the one painting in which she almost loses her mask of reserve and total control. Maria Felix ended up not letting him borrow the painting for the show, not marrying him. He went back to Frida, and later that year, after he was back with her, Kahlo painted this painting. It's in the show. The love embrace of the universe, the earth, Mexico, Diego, me, and Señor Zolotl. That's that little esquinkle dog lying on the left on the universe's arm. So what she's done is a kind of image of marital harmony, but it has to be sustained by all of these love embraces of the universe in Mexico. She's figured out the best way to hold on to Rivera is to treat him like a baby. And she said, women, among them I, would always want to hold him in their arms like a newborn baby at every moment. He is my child born every moment, diary from myself. That's all very well, but her breast is cracked, and so is Mexico's behind her, so that's not, and she's crying. So the image is not entirely a sanguine one. But the mothering thing was certainly true. Here's a wonderful photograph taken of Frida about this time, Frida and Diego about this time, her sort of mothering him. After 1949, Frida Kahlo was too sick for Rivera to leave. Her health really declined at this point. He spent a lot of time apart from her in his studios in San Angel. In 1950 to 51, she was in the hospital for a year, having seven or nine operations on her spine. And Rivera was, sometimes he was great. He'd be there and he'd dance around and pretend he was a bear. He brought her movies or got friends to bring movies. Brought tequila. Frida said that she passed the time in the hospital as though it was a fiesta. The doctors, though, noticed that Frida Kahlo's condition got much worse when Rivera was absent and improved enormously when he was attentive. Her health kept declining. She, in 1953, her right leg was cut off at the knee, and this nearly crushed her spirit, but she did write in her journal, drew her cut-off leg, and she wrote, feet, what do I need them for if I have wings to fly? At this point in her life, politics became kind of a religion for her. I think there it is. Yes. About a week before she died, she went to protest the CIA's interference in Guatemala and getting rid of President Arbenz. And she's being, that's Juan O'Gorman on the left, who was the architect of her house, and Diego Rivera right behind her. Her health, she was very sick when she went out, and she probably shouldn't have gone. I mean, doctors didn't want her to go out. But she became a fervent communist at the end of her life, passionate about, she's given up Trotsky long ago, and very passionate about Stalin and Mao, and wrote about them in her journal. And politics was a huge bond with Rivera. Rivera was kicked out of the Communist Party when the year he married Frida, and he desperately wanted to rejoin it. Kahlo had actually already rejoined in 1948, and he didn't get back in until after she died, but she was sort of trying to help him get back into the party. Here is a painting. Rivera is painting a huge mural called The Nightmare of War and the Dream of Peace, and putting Frida Kahlo into it, and there's Frida modeling for it in her wheelchair. And let's see, is that working? Where is it? The little light is not going, but you can see Frida Kahlo in the portrait, put Frida Kahlo's portrait right behind. There it is. So there's Frida handing out Stockholm peace petitions for Mexicans to sign. So, Frida Kahlo is a political heroine in his painting, and he is desperate to rejoin the party. Both Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera painted still lifes of watermelons just shortly before they died. Actually, this one on the left is Frida's. She wrote Viva la Vida, Frida Kahlo, on that front slice of watermelon 8 days before she died. And Rivera's paintings from 1957, the year that he died. I don't know whether he did it because of a memory of Frida or what, but it's also a very Mexican subject that they both loved. I think that both still lives hail the vibrancy of life, but Kahlo's, with its half night, half sky, also seems to acknowledge the imminence of death. When she died in July 1954, probably of an intentional drug overdose. Diego Rivera was said by his friends to be like a soul cut in two. Here you see him following her hearse at her funeral. He said, "Too late now, I realized that the most wonderful part of my life had been my love for Frida." A year after her death, she was given a memorial show in Mexico City, and he made this kind of tribute to her 1 year after she died, making a portrait of Frida Kahlo as her head as a heart, that made rather suitable. And he wrote on it, "1 year ago today, for the child of my eyes, Fizita," that was his nickname for her, on the 13th of July, 1955, 1 year from her death. After she died, he gave her house, the house she was born in and where she died, to the people of Mexico to perpetuate her memory. It's now the Frida Kahlo Museum. It's a wonderful museum in the Coyoacan section of Mexico City. Here you see her studio on the left, with a late portrait and called "Marxism Will Give Health to the Sick." And there's her kitchen with the little cups. They're little tiny cups, coffee cups. Why isn't that going? Does anyone see? Oh, there it is. And anyway, you see right there the coffee cup spelling Frida and Diego. And here is the last image. It's a photograph of the wall in the Frida Kahlo Museum. It's that wonderful blue of the Frida Kahlo house. And it says, "Frida and Diego lived in this house from 1929 to 1954, which we all know is not precisely true. They did live in the United States. They lived in San Angel in the mid-30s. But I think for two such sacred monsters, the truths embodied in myths are perhaps almost as important as those recorded in fact. Thank you very much. And I will take questions. Thank you very much. So I'm happy to take questions, and I gather we have microphones to give to people so that I can hear you. Do we have any questions?
I'm curious why Diego was banned from the party.
Because, I think because he had a very inconsistent, undisciplined political behavior. He did whatever he wanted to do. I forget there was some kind of conflict over labor unions. Trotsky had problems with him too, because he didn't adhere to any party line in a very correct and disciplined and regular way. So he was impossible. More questions? No? Okay. Well, we seem to have two. This one right there.
I don't see any pictures of her parents in those very personal paintings of hers. What was her relationship with her?
Oh, there is in the exhibition. Do we have it still in the exhibition? She did paint her parents a couple of times. She painted her sort of her forebears. It's called My Grandparents, My Parents, and I. It's done in 1936. She painted her parents in the middle of the painting. They're done from a wedding portrait, and then her maternal and paternal grandparents floating in the sky, all held up by a ribbon, and her in the middle of the Coyoacan house. I think it's in the show. It was in the Minneapolis part of the show. Her father was a German photographer who emigrated to Mexico in the late 19th century and very intellectual man, very neurotic. He had seizures. He was an epileptic, and he had seizures, which terrified Frida as a child, but she adored him. She identified much more with her father than with her mother. He said about Frida that Frida is the most intelligent of my daughters. She is the most like me. And the other girls were wonderful, but Frida was the smartest one. And maybe she was the son he never had. You know, he taught her all about science. He took her on walks and taught her biology. And she became the kind of assistant in his photography studio. She went with him. She learned how to use very small brushes. Maybe that's why she paints in that miniaturist style, by learning how to retouch photographs. And then on photography outings, she'd go with him to make sure if he had a seizure that his camera wasn't stolen. Her mother, she had a more complex relationship with, in that her mother was pretty strict and very, very Catholic. And Kala was rebellious and always trying out things that she shouldn't have been doing, and it irritated her mother. But she loved her mother. Some people, she often said things that were negative about her mother, but she really did adore her. So. But the mother was very Mexican, and half Spanish background, half Indian background. Any more questions? Yes?
You commented that her mother was very Catholic. She uses the one Christian symbolist with the crown of thorns. She doesn't use, she has a whole mythology that she uses, a surrealist type of mythology. Are there other things that she uses, this Catholicism?
Yes, there's a painting, one of Frida's favorite of her own paintings is called My Nurse and I, and she's lying in the arms of her Indian wet nurse. And it's very much taken from a Madonna Caritas image of the Virgin suckling Christ, except that the Virgin was a lot cozier than this nurse was wearing this Aztec mask. I mean, a Teotihuacan mask, actually. It's a painting that it's not like a mother-child painting. It's more like Frida Kahlo as the sacrificial victim.
So her religion was a very personal one.
Kahlo rejected religion, but I mean, she's communist. She rejected it starting probably around 19 years old. But there are photographs of her wearing a cross when about 18, 19 years old. So I think maybe once she'd married Rivera, she had to discard that. Any more? Yes?
Thank you. So where will Frida Kahlo go down in history? What will her reputation be, or how will she be compared with other painters?
At the moment, she has a tremendous reputation, and I used to wonder how long it would last, and you know how long the sort of cult thing could last. Every time I see a show of her paintings or see her paintings again, I'm very happy because I realize why there's a cult of Frida Kahlo, because the paintings really are incredibly moving. And it's not that she's going to go down in history as the world's great formalist painter, because that's not what she... one never really talks that much about form, line, color. Her colors are beautiful. I mean, you could talk about those things, but mostly you end up talking about subject matter with Frida Kahlo. And when you spend your time looking at slides and reproductions, I ended up sort of thinking, oh, well, she's an image maker. And I couldn't possibly do a formalist interpretation of her work. But when we opened up the crates at the Walker Art Center, and they were doing the condition reports under really bright lights, you could sort of put your nose 5 inches in the paintings and you could really see them. They are beautifully painted. She's a really good artist. I mean, they're wonderfully... The brushwork is extraordinary. The colors are really subtle. She wasn't a great draftswoman. Her drawings, I didn't include any drawings in the show because I don't think she drew very well. So they're none. When you come upon, let's say, Self-Portrait with Cropped Hair in the Museum of Modern Art, it's amongst surrealist paintings, and she stands out. They're incredibly forceful. So I don't think she's ever going to be forgotten. I don't know that the cult of Frida Kahlo may have something to do with society's needs at this time. Now, maybe those needs will be different 20, 100 years from now, but I don't think she'll ever be again forgotten the way she kind of was after she died until the 70s. Yes?
In the Rockefeller Center paintings, could you talk more about that and why he was... I think they put the Lenin on him. And could you go into the aspect of the political ramifications, or was he just rebelling?
Rivera?
Yeah.
He was a deeply political, and undisciplined, but a deeply political creature. Politics was... underlined so many of his paintings, almost all of them in a funny way. Even all those portraits of Mexican Indian women, they're in a sense political too. Why did he put... art is supposed to transform the world. He wanted to participate in the Marxist revolution, and he was doing it through painting. And that Rockefeller Center painting, he put Lenin in there. He always said that there'd been a drawing with Lenin, but I'm not sure that that's true, that Nelson Rockefeller should have known that Lenin was going to be there, but he did. I think Lenin entered the picture sometime around May Day, and it didn't last long. I mean, Rivera was, they pulled the scaffold away from the mural, and he couldn't finish it. Luckily, he had an assistant with a camera who took a lot of pictures at the last minute, and so he was able to repaint it the following year. But it's a powerfully... If you go to see it in the Palace of Fine Arts, it's a very political painting. Any more questions? Yes?
Thank you. I noticed in a lot of the pictures there's a lot of stuff that I wondered about, particularly airplanes, that in at least two of the pictures, maybe more, there were airplanes.
There's that one in the second self-portrait. I'm trying to remember. Well, there's a portrait that's a self-portrait that's lost where it says they wished for planes but only got straw wings. That's in a little legend, but that's a lost painting of her as a child with a sort of nailed down to the ground with angel wings, but they're made of straw. The self-portrait with an airplane and a clock in the sky. That one, I've always wondered if it had anything to do with Lindbergh's flight or whether she's being witty, you know, saying time flies. I've never really known for sure why she put the clock and the airplane. Fascination with modern technology there for her, just having, that was the year she married Rivera. So, but maybe it had to do with Lindbergh because Ambassador Morrow was very much the patron for Rivera's mural in Cuernavaca that he did in 1930. And, well, maybe there was already contact and he knew about Lindbergh's Morrow daughter was married to Lindbergh. Does that all make a little bit of sense? I don't know the answer, in other words. Yes?
Is there a difference in the way that she is regarded or admired in Mexico and outside?
The way she's admired either in Mexico or outside. I think everybody has their own Frida, and there certainly sometimes have been sort of backlashes in Mexico against Frida because people get annoyed, especially Diego Rivera's daughter apparently feels that Frida wasn't a very good painter and that he painted half her paintings, which is not true. But there's kind of backlash because of the cult of Frida Kahlo. People get sort of fed up with people when they become that famous, and they can't see why they feel that they're overrated. I think that most people have such a personal response so that it isn't really divided by nationalities. I think women artists respond to her in a very powerful way, and she's knowing her work has made it possible for a lot of women artists to keep on painting, which has been a wonderful thing. Are there any more? Yes?
God, finally. I was surprised to see an Asian yin and yang symbol, and I wondered if there was an influence from, you know, I mean, I think of Mexico when I see all of her paintings, and that was a surprise.
Yeah, I think, you know, the whole idea of some duality that she loved, and she knew about different cultures. She knew a lot about different cultures, and she was also kind of interested in occult things. But I think, yeah, this is the kind of thing that she would have loved, the idea of the male-female duality. She was a very sophisticated person. She read a lot. They had an incredible library. You'll see it in the Frida Kahlo Museum. So other... And her diary has a lot of that kind of thing in it. There are yin-yang symbols in her diary, too. Other questions? Yes?
Was she very fiery of personality?
Fiery. She
was taking a back seat and put up with a lot. So I'm not picking up that she was...
Oh, she was strong. You know that marriage portrait, even though she's playing the little wife? Mm-hmm. The little wife was a role a lot of Mexican women play, but actually they won everything. I mean, she was... The fierce is a word that's often used for Frida. She was so many-leveled, but she could be... She was very intense, very alive. She loved to dance. She loved to drink. She loved to sing. She, you know, whenever she could, she would dance. Sometimes she couldn't, obviously. She loved going to plays that were done in a kind of folkloric way. They were called the carpas, so there was sort of folk theater in Mexico. Loved going to concerts. She loved making entrances with Diego Rivera with her wonderful costumes. And she talked and sang. I mean, the movie actually wasn't too bad. It was pretty good. it wasn't... Sometimes it was over the top, but... that scene, for example, in the Mexican market where he takes two melons and makes them into a breast, and then she takes a gourd and makes it into her penis. They never would have done that. In the Mexican market in 1929 or 30, I lived in Mexico in the 1950s, and I wasn't even allowed to wear short sleeves. I mean, out of respect to people, they would not have done that in a market. But that's Hollywood.
Yeah.
But most of the film I really liked. Do we have any more questions, or should we adjourn? Yes? Okay, well, thank you. Thank you. Very much. So, now we go back.
Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org.